What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We are live on YouTube. We're live on Twitch. We're live on Twitter. I can see we are not live on Facebook, despite trying.
Suck it, Facebook.
Yeah, there you go. But maybe you're listening to us later in a couple of different places, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. It is all good. Now, meanwhile, I'll just mention right here at the top, even though we got a lot of awesome guests for you all tonight, one of our co-hosts, Justin, and maybe I'll talk about this later on the podcast. This is going to sound like a joke, but he's actually in the opera, the Metropolitan Opera, like legit opera.
The Opera House?
Yes, he is swing for the opera. So if somebody gets sick or they break their legs, he jumps on stage and he does it. But he is looking for a spot under the opera. Like, I know the show was closed, but like the classic Phantom of the Opera.
Classic. And Justin's like, oh, yeah, there's an opening? Well, guess what? I'm going to sneak on in there. I'm going to swing into the Phantom of the Opera.
Yes. So there you go. He's looking for a spot. So hopefully he'll be able to jump into the stream later on.
Because when you think of Justin, you think of opera. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
Can he even sing?
I was going to say, have you heard him sing? Because
I haven't.
Not great.
Oh, man. That's messed up.
I mean, I don't know. I obviously can't sing great either.
But... yeah, you were all ready to be like, oh, he sucks at it.
Yeah. Well, he's doing a comedy part. It's this new boxing opera is what I believe it is. I know, again, this sounds like a joke.
Is it based on Mike Tyson's Punch-Out?
Yeah, it's Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, the opera.
Right, right.
And, oh my God, I'm blanking on literally any details about Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. What's the name of, Sweetie Boy Kim? That's not what it is. Like, who are you?
Sweeney Todd?
Not Sweetie Todd. Who are you playing when you're in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out? What's your character?
You're Mike.
No, you're not Mike.
I was just going to see because you don't know. So
no, I know that. The whole point is you're going to beat up Mike at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're a character.
Yeah, little guy.
I don't know. Somebody.
Little Mac.
Little Mac. That's what I was looking for. Not Sweetie Boy Kim.
Sweetie Boy Kim and Little Mac, you get those confused all the time.
They're very close. It's the same letters. You just kind of reverse them. Anyway, maybe he will be here or maybe he will be under the opera. We don't really know. But I'll tell you what, why don't we bring in our first guest here rather than my cold, addled brain trying to make sense of what's going on with video games that came out decades ago. They are the creators of Count Dante, a new book that is going to be coming out from Scout Comics. Ladies and gentlemen, Wes Watson and JC Barber, hello, welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
I'm sorry about all the digging. Pete is texting Justin right now. We're trying to figure this out. But
nobody
guys, thank
heard
you.
Any digging, man. It's all in your head.
Oh, God. This is going really bad. In any case, very excited to chat about this book, Count Dante, the most dangerous man in the world. You guys seem pretty nice, on the other hand. what was...
It's the unauthorized, sort of true story of the deadliest man who ever lived.
All right. Talk about this a little bit, because when we mentioned this in the Patreon Slack, there was at least one person who was like, whoa, Count Dante? Is that for real? Are you talking about that? I had never heard of him. And I assume some of our audience hasn't heard of him as well. So before we even get to the comic book, who is he and what made him the most dangerous man alive?
Well, what made him the most dangerous man alive is his image of himself. You know, I don't know if you could actually say he was, but he was this martial arts expert in Chicago in the 70s who ran a couple of dojos. And, he was quite a hustler. He was about 50% con man and 50% badass.
Oh, that's a perfect combo right there.
Yeah, I think
that's as far as percentage wise, that's nice.
Yeah, that's not too bad. And he, I think we say in the comic, you know, he was a cape wearing, hairdressing, used car selling karate master. And those were all jobs that he held. I mean, he styled hair. While he was also running a used car lot, while he was also running these dojos. But he was a man with outsized ambitions, and He really wanted to become a star, a superstar of the martial arts world. He created a persona. His real name is John Timothy Kean, but he created a persona, Count Juan Rafael Dante, and a whole backstory, which is, you know, flimsy at best, but it was, you know, he was Spanish royalty hiding here in America. And he used that to become something of a superstar for a very brief period of time in the world of martial arts. I mean, he was on covers of Black Belt magazine, and it was around the time when Bruce Lee died. So they tried him out in Hollywood, and he didn't know how to pull his punches. So that didn't last very long. and he held these very controversial blood sport tournaments where they basically was, you know, there was no rules other than, you know, gouge and hurt someone. Wow. And it made him very controversial in the world of martial arts. But it also kind of made him a star for a brief period. And he ended up ending in a rather ignominious, mysterious way. But he's, you know, he's a fascinating character. And I think you're not alone. I would say 90% of people have not heard of him at this point. If you go back, Wes was the one who found it and came to me with the idea. If you go down that rabbit hole, you'll find they had stories, newspaper stories on them all through in Chicago during the time. And he was, you know, pretty well known then. But now no one uses. I mean, believe me, every time we tell people about doing this story, it's the same reaction, basically, like, Jesus Christ, who is this? That sounds crazy.
Well, Wes, if you were the guy who discovered him, what was interesting to you about this Count Dante character? How did you find out about him?
Yeah, I JC will tell you that he usually reads more of the modern. I read more of the old stuff, you know, on average. Mm-hmm. So I was reading I think it was an old detective or Batman book. It was, you know, early 70s, you know, and there was this ad in the book. And, you know, it looks crazy. It's this guy and he's, you know, he's in this weird pose, strange hair. And you know, if you were a kid in the 70s, you could send off and he would send you a manual that would teach you a death punch, a dim mock punch. And, you know, it was right up there with, you know, everything else you would find in, you know, comic books at the time with the, you know, the X-ray vision goggles and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
It was just unreal. I don't know how many times I'd seen the ad before, but it didn't register. And so I was like, well, I got to know who this crazy person is. And I started looking it up and, you know, we'll always say, you know, we kind of fell down the rabbit hole. And that's what happens, because as soon as you start to look into it, there's way more than just this ad. And he was a crazy person. But, you know, what we found was one of my favorite things that I've read over and over again, which is, you know, a lot of people say, well, he was full of shit, you know, and a lot of people don't think he was good for martial arts. But then they'll say, you know, like he, you know, everything he said was a lie or half of what he said was a lie. And he was, you know, he's a crazy person. And then they'd say, oh, but he could fight. Yeah. And there were a few people that would test this. You know, they would see this person at a gas station. He would roll up in this like a big boat of a 70s car, and it would have nice. A, you know, a Spanish royalty crest on the side. He would get out. You know, with his cape on, and you know, they'd say, well, you know, who's this asshole, you know, and it was a bad idea, you know. So really what it came down to was we were just floored that, you know, he's not more well known, and as we looked into it, we're like, we've got to do something with this.
I could jump in. Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff you just mentioned. Let me back up the truck first, though, and just say, like, I love what you guys got behind you and stuff. It really makes me feel like I'm in Artist Alley a little bit. You got your signs up and stuff and the Count Dante posters, which is great. Secondly, also, you brought up, like, the old X-ray vision ads and stuff. That's one of the great things about this is there's so much going on in this book. There's so many cool aspects to it. You guys have really layered this with a lot of ideas. People are getting a lot for their money Not only does it look cool and have this unique story, but then also you've got the fake ads in there that I loved. Oh, man, it was like a nostalgia bath with comedy infused in it. It was just so unique and cool, like the Dad Bod ad, the Turning Comics to Money ad, just some funny, great stuff in there.
You read the small stuff too, though. That's awesome to hear, because all the little ones, I always worry that people might have passed over. But yeah, that was, you know, that was an idea early on. We had a buddy that we were, when we were first talking about doing the comic, he just kind of threw it out there. He said, since it was inspired by an ad, he thought it would be funny if we, wouldn't it be funny if you guys did a bunch of silly ads kind of parodying the old 1970s ads? And at one point we needed like extra pages early on in one of the first few books, and Wes and I were just like, well, let's make up some ads. And then it became a thing, you know. And so then we just kind of dove into it and started making up crazy silly ads, all of them parodies of it, 1970s existing ads, but taken to, you know, crazy.
I love the Army Men one too.
Which one?
The Army Men.
Oh yeah. like the HR director and the,
You got to use the HR director last time.
Well, just to get back to the content of the book, beyond the ads a little bit. So you've got this real life character who obviously is exaggerating his life a bit anyway. Yeah. That said, what did you feel like in terms of the line of your responsibility to present this person accurately versus exaggerating him in a similar way for effect for the comic book? Where did that line fall for you?
That's a really good question. I think Wes once said in another interview that we did that we kind of leaned into his image of himself when we created this, which is true. We didn't. It should not be confused with any sort of actual history of Count Dante. We went to fantastical and ridiculous lengths with it. There are a number of things in the book that are true, or at least have been reported to be true. But, you know, we just took them to ridiculous lengths. And we sort of felt like the hope was that people would read this and have a good time because it's kind of a parody or a pastiche of like 1970s Luke Cage and Iron Fist comics and that sort of vibe. But we hope that they would read it, giggle, have a good time, and then maybe go down the rabbit hole like we did and start looking, you know, out of curiosity at all the real stories, which honestly are in another way equally crazy. I mean, they're real, but they're equally crazy. There's suspicions that he was involved in like a $1.5 million heist that was with the mafia, and there's, you know, just a number of things that are a little more real, a little less funny or cartoonish, but are still every bit, you know, crazy and weird and fascinating.
We got a question here from YouTube. This is from Derek Mainhart. The art style is very 70s, Wes. What artists were you looking at for inspiration?
Well, anything that was in the, you know, Burn on Iron Fist, Luke Cage, you know, anything from the 70s. I don't know if I was actually looking at anything at the time where I was, you know, saying I want to look just like that. I know when I was looking at the early Luke Cage, I loved the color. We didn't go straight to that was a big conversation with Paula early on, because there's a lot of limitations in the color of the 70s. It looks great, but with this being the first book that I had, first pages I'd penciled, inked, all that. Some of the things we needed to get done with color were things that you wouldn't probably have done in the 70s. So we do use halftones, but they're halftones for effect, not halftones as part of a printing process. But that means that we also were doing some gradients, you know, where we thought we needed to do that. So we just like the book, we took liberties. So nice. It was more to get the feel of, not exactly to, replicate a 70s book.
Yeah. So just logistically, the first issue is going to be out on April 19th. Is that correct? Which is tomorrow.
April 26th now.
April 26th. Okay.
Yeah, they pushed it a week.
Yeah, but I think I can also say, I mean, you sent us 5 issues, so you guys are pretty much done with it at this point. Is that correct?
Yeah. Wes is still working on a couple of pages for the last one, but it's pretty much, he'll have it by the end of this weekend, I think, pretty much.
Wes, is that true? Confirmed.
Pretty much, yeah. I'm going to send over, I send color corrections back to Paula. And when I send this next batch, there will be one page left. I wanted to do just a little bit of stuff left, you know, on that. And then there's a cover that's 70% done. So as soon as I get a little time to work that out. But yeah, it's very close. It's in the home stretch until if we hear that we need like another cover or something later, which, you know, I had other variants already made for other issues down the line. But then they all got bumped to one. So there's at least 2 covers of mine that have never, I don't think they've ever been put out there. And then there's another cover by another artist that, I don't know. I guess I can say that, but yeah, there are other covers out there that'll be like Whatnot, you know?
Yeah. You see this cover back here, one right there, which is, I mean, incredible, right?
Definitely.
The homage to Deadly Hands. Yeah. Wes originally intended that to be later in the series. I think, was that 3 or 2, Wes? But they decided they wanted it. Scout wanted it as one of our specialty covers. So it's now along with the other 2 for the first issue.
Well, I tore through those 5 issues, man. It's a fun read. It's really great and very rewarding.
Well, I'm glad you like it. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, given that you guys are almost done with this one, are you looking forward to the next title, or are you just looking forward to finally getting this out next week?
Yeah, I think maybe the latter more. I'm working on some stuff. Wes is working on something as well. A little, he's got a child on the way, so he's got his hands full.
The ultimate comic book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a big project in the other room, which is outfitting the nursery. So,
So at some point in the future, there's more stuff to be done. But right now, we just like to enjoy the aspect of getting this out there a little bit, you know.
Before I let you go, we do have one question here from YouTube, which I think is directly relevant because it kind of comes up in the book. But who would win in a fight, Count Dante or Chuck Norris?
Oh, that's interesting. gosh, that's a good question, because Norris makes an appearance in there, and by the transitive property in the comic, Dante would have won a fight between Chuck and he.
I think no matter what happens, I think Dante would have told people later that he had won. So.
Excellent. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. Congrats on the book. It's very fun. I'm excited for people to finally see it next week.
Yeah, congrats.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
And hey, Mark Russell's on soon. He's a writing hero of mine. The guy's brilliant. So I might just hang around in your green room back here watch that interview.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much for coming on, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called Count Dante. It's out next week, April 26th, from Scout Comics. Very fun. Definitely check it out. And we are going to bring, as cleverly teased, I love this when the guests queue up the next guest.
Oh, the guest doing your job for you there.
I don't even need to say this part. We know who's coming in. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Russell. Hello, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
Thank you so much for coming. Welcome. You have a bunch of things, the irons of the fire. I don't know. Maybe that's not the right word. But right now you got 2 things that are pretty big. One, Second Coming Trinity from Ahoy Comics just came out, I believe. And then you've also got Bunk Bed Mishaps on Kickstarter. I want to start with that first, because this is a very different project for you. We certainly know you from your comic book work. We love everything that you do. We love reading your books, you know, from whether it's DC or the Ahoy comic stuff or otherwise. But this is something that I think is like, I would hearken more towards being like Far Side in a way, like sort of short cartoons. Is that fair? That's
probably an accurate, at least within my framework description. It's like probably my Far Side. There's no, by which I mean, there's no real connection from cartoon to cartoon. And they all seem to sort of take place in this universe that doesn't really exist. You know, they are all kind of like independent universes where, you know, sometimes they are like scenes from movies that were never made or just parts of conversations that never happened. I don't know, frankly, where these comics come from, but I've been drawing them for a long time. And yeah, they're definitely very different than my comics. So apologies in advance for anyone who's buying it expecting, you know, more, you know, traveling to Mars or Snagglepuss or something.
Well, what specifically spurred you on to put these out there? Was it just having the volume of content necessary to create a book, or was there something else that drove
you on?
Yeah, a
couple things. It was like, one, I you know, I've got like hundreds of these things, and I thought, well, it'd be cool to, like, you know, let people see them, because I think, you know, I for a long time I was kind of embarrassed by them, and then like recently I rediscovered these aren't bad. These are just, you know, who I was, you know, when I was drawing them, and who I, you know, it's a different part of me than you see in my writing. And also, you know, I thought it'd be cool to have something that I could give to people, or, you know, have at the cons that they couldn't really get anywhere else. I don't see this being a big seller in the bookstores and stuff, but people will really love it if they see it like at a convention table or something.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that definitely feels like the sort of thing where, like you're saying, you come up for a Flintstones or a Snagglepuss or whatever, and you're like, oh, what's this? What's this thing that doesn't look like these other things? Let me get that.
Right. If you look at like a table with all my comics stuff, this would be the one. This one does not like is not like the others. And it's, you know, and a lot of times at conventions, I talk to people and they've already, you know, bought everything that I have. And, you know, it's like, and I enjoy talking to people. And, but a lot of times, you know, but it'd be nice to have something like, say, well, you don't have this, or, you know, here's something new.
Yeah. You're going to get that one person who's like, well, I also have that.
Yeah. Mark. No, but, you know, also, you know, it was just fun for me because I've always kind of, you know, I was drawing cartoons. I've drawn cartoons longer than I've been a writer, and it was always kind of my dream to have a book of my own cartoons or be syndicated, be in a major newspaper. And now that major newspapers don't really exist anymore, the book of cartoons is as close as I'll get.
Well, that's awesome. I really love the name. It's just such a fun thing that makes me think of my childhood, like growing up, living that bunk bed lifestyle with my brother. So can you talk a little bit about, like, is this kind of like comedy geared towards a certain style, or what is the kind of
Well, I think they're all pretty absurd. I think it's more absurdist comedy, and the name is kind of like, I think just sort of embodies the sense that you know something's going on in the top bunk that's gonna like crash and destroy everything below. And that's kind of the way I think about like my imagination, where it is when it's coming up with these cartoons. It's like, this is like somebody jumping on the top bunk of a bunk bed.
This is also beyond the cartoon book of it all. This is also your first Kickstarter, I believe. And I'll note, with 15 days to go as we're taping it, your pledged goal, you're looking for 5,000. You're already at 7,814. So
yeah,
you've done it, which is awesome. What's been your Kickstarter experience so far? How's it been for you?
It's been great, you know, mostly because I've gotten a lot of help from people who knew what they were doing, as opposed to myself. Nice. I was just sort of an ingenue. I didn't really know anything about Kickstarter or how to do anything, but I've gotten a lot of great advice from old veterans at this sort of thing, and it really helped.
Yeah. Obviously you can get the book. I know I was looking through and you have a bunch of like different cornucopias and things. Do you have a stretch goal at this point as well, since you've surpassed the main goal?
Yeah. I should probably put that on the actual Kickstarter, but my hope is to get to 10,000. The idea being that I can use the profits to like print a bunch of extra books to keep in my garage. So that I've got like a ton of books just to bring to conventions or free comic book day or to just give to like friends or fans who have everything else.
I like the idea that you're going to put the stretch goal, keep a couple of books in my garage. $5,000 more, please.
Such great, grand ambitions in life.
Well, this is very cool. I'm very excited to read this book. The other book that you have coming out, though, as we mentioned, is the third part of the Second Coming trilogy, Second Coming Trinity. Now, before we get to it, the book proper, I did want to mention that we have a professional chef that we work with, Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullet. Pete?
Stray Bullies.
There you go. You like to say it that way. And every once in a while, when we have a guest here, he will design a drink based on something that they created. And so he created a book, a drink called The Trinity, which I did not make tonight because I'm very much under the weather and sneezy, but it sounds delicious. And he put up a little picture of it, and it looks delicious. But it,
yeah, I just did a screen cap. I'm going to make that later.
Yeah, we'll send it to you. Oh, okay. It's gin, dry vermouth, sweet vermouth, orange juice, Angostura bitters, and orange peel. And
gin
there
and
you
juice,
go.
I love it.
Gin and juice, yeah. right in your wheelhouse. So there you go. I'm very excited to try it once I actually kick this cold.
Sounds like an excellent source of vitamin C.
Yeah, oh, exactly. You
all right, I'll be right back.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to help you, this drink.
Right, I can't afford not to drink it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, there you go. So Second Coming Trinity, though, this, so just to kind of like throw it out as a framing, when the first Second Coming book came out, it was a huge deal, and not just in terms of a huge deal of like, it was a good book, because it was a good book, but in terms of a lot of people were very upset about the idea of a Superbad character and the actual Jesus hanging out together. you're now several books down the line. Are you still getting that same sort of blowback to this book, or has that calmed down at all?
No, not getting any, really. I think the irony is that almost all the outrage and, you know, anger over this book came before anybody had read a single page of it, you know.
Right.
And at the time, I sort of naively imagined, I understand that the concept, the premise sounds a little iffy. I mean, most of my ideas sound a little iffy. They usually sound like this is going to be a terrible book, but but I thought, you know, at least back then that people would at least give it a shot before they you know, came to judgments about it. That was, you know, my own naivete, because of course in comic books, everyone has an opinion the moment it's announced. And so they had their day, you know, the critics, you know, they controlled the narrative from the time it was announced until the time it came out. And so all anybody knew about it was what they were hearing, you know, people on Fox News or in, you know, the in the blogosphere saying about it, none of whom knew what they're talking about because none of them had read a single page of it. And then when it finally did come out, all of that sort of like speculation and feigned outrage just sort of disappeared because one, it was too late to stop it. And two, it was, you know, they were all wrong. They didn't know what they're talking about. And what's happened since then, and in fact, it actually worked out pretty well for me because the controversy and the got a lot of people to notice it who wouldn't have noticed it otherwise. And a lot of people, you know, just read it because they were intrigued because they'd heard about it, you know, or were planning to hate read it. And I had a number of people contact me saying, I bought this with the idea that I would be burning it later, that I would, this would be a quick trip to my incinerator, but it was actually much more pro-Christ and thoughtful, more of a thoughtful take on Christianity than they had they'd imagined it would be, and they've since become fans. So I you know, I consider that to be sort of a testament to how well the book turned out. And also, you know, I feel like the people that have stuck around since then are the people who are just genuinely enjoying it.
I do want to talk about the book proper, but I think just this pivots nicely off of what you were just saying. We got a question here from YouTube. You write a lot about the underpinnings of belief systems. What is it about the workings of religion that fascinates you?
Well, I think the overriding thing that fascinates me in general, the sort of thing underpinnings maybe all my writing, is the idea that, you know, we need we need so much as human beings, because we got these massive brains that can keep us awake at night asking questions. Well, what happens after I die? Or, you know, am I going to be alive tomorrow? You know, what, you know, is there anything out there that I don't know about? And so we need answers to those. But our need for those, our very real need for those answers gets co-opted by the institutions that are that say they have those answers. And these institutions, whether they be churches or organized religions, that were created to be an asset to our spiritual life, at some point it reverses itself and our spiritual lives become assets to these institutions. And that's kind of what I write about how institutions co-opt our needs to for their own survival at our expense.
Wow.
Well, let's talk about this book itself, because I think it takes... not necessarily, turns probably the wrong word, but it definitely changes the focus in a big way, where at least in the first issue, you almost have, without getting too much into spoilers, our two characters that we've been following are almost side characters in a certain way, and you have instead this mastermind, villainous Lex Luthor type character who takes front stage. What was the idea there? Why was that important for this particular book?
Well, it sets up a lot of what happens in the third volume, and also it reinforces the theme of the series, which I think is like you have to be very careful about how you use power, because you know you're creating every time you defeat one villain, or every time you use power, you're creating a villain. You know, you're radicalizing somebody every time you beat somebody up. So forgiveness and compassion are much better tools for fixing the world than, you know, violence. And we see the fruits of that in this one, where, you know, we see the roots of Sunstar and Cranius, and it turns out like it was a beef they had in high school that ultimately culminates in Cranius causing this earthquake, which kills hundreds of people in Urban City.
This particular first issue doesn't necessarily deal too much with Jesus, like even less so than the previous books.
Yeah, he's in the back babysitting. They're pretty much this whole issue. So
is he going to come more to the forefront over the course of the series, presumably?
Yeah, definitely. One of the main storylines is about Jesus trying to get his own church off the ground in some, you know, dilapidated downtown real estate across the street, as fate would have it, from the city's mega church. And then the other half is about Sunstar and Sheila trying to raise a baby that has all the same superpowers that he does. And it's something that both Sunstar and Jesus know something about, being a child with superpowers. And in fact, we get some scenes from Christ's childhood and about, you know, what a nightmare it was to like have this little kid who had the same thoughts and, sort of like the same sort of brattiness as other little kids, but what the powers of the Son of God. And so it's very much about how sort of premature acquisition of power, which is, I think, what you could say the fate is the state the entire human race is in at this moment, is incredibly dangerous, not only to the person who has it, but to everyone around them.
I think you touched on this a little bit before, but writing Jesus very specifically as a character over this many issues, has this made you reevaluate your relationship with religion at all?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a very religious household, but it's not a religion I would care to repeat. It's not, you know, something that I found it really repressive and not really meaningful to me on a spiritual level. And so I just sort of threw it all out and I sort of dismissed it in the Bible and everything as just kind of being nonsense. You know, a friend later said to me, it's like, well, are you sure you didn't just, you know, swear off barbers because you got a bad haircut?
Oh.
And I said, well, you know, maybe they got a point. And so I started writing a book about the Bible and started reading the Bible again. And yeah, I was kind of surprised at how much of it I just thought was really profound and wise. And so I thought, well, the problem wasn't necessarily with the Bible or with Christianity. It was with the flavor I was raised in. It was like the version that, you know, only spoon fed me 1% of the Bible that they felt I needed to, you know, keep me eating my vegetables and sitting down in class. You know, the parts that were useful to them, not the parts that were useful to me. And that's sort of been my critique of religion since then, is that it's that religions aren't good if they are giving believers what the faith needs rather than giving the believers what the believer needs to have faith. And so I think any religion, if it works and can be a positive force in your life, if it helps you make sense of, you know, your place in the universe, if it makes you feel like, I think everyone's true religion is whatever it is makes them feel like their existence was not a mistake. And for different people, that will be different things. You know, for some people, it's, you know, movies, you know, it could be tennis. I don't know. But I think this is what people have to find. It's like, well, what is it that makes me feel like I'm here for a purpose, and not necessarily just resign themselves to the religious tradition they were raised in.
We got one here. This is a big one, I guess. You discussed the limits of forgiveness in this issue. What would you say constitutes something that is beyond forgiving?
Well, I think what Cranius does is kind of beyond forgiving. I mean, he kills hundreds of people, and he does it to settle a high school beef with Sunstar. That's I mean, to me, I think all sort of human evil kind of like roots down to pettiness. I feel like that's sort of the root of all evil. Like you taking small insults and making them bigger than they really are, and overreacting or reacting in a way that harms more than just the person you have a grief with. So I think that that's really the task, is I think forgiveness is to sort of keep the pot from boiling over. To compassion and forgiveness are both to sort of like keep that us from getting that point where human pettiness is driving the car.
Awesome. This one is from Nat. It's actually two parts. I'll read the first part here and put the second part up on the screen. You seem to have a really solid understanding of politics. A lot of comics writers reveal a limited understanding when they try to write about politics or social issues. What are some books or comic writers who do understand real world politics and social issues?
Well, I really like, the American Flag by Howard Chaykin, I thought was a great comic for that. I think also one of my favorite sort of social commentary, but not really overtly done. One of my favorite single issue comics of all time was Neil Gaiman's Ramadan issue in Sandman. I think it's issue number 50, and it was written during the Iraq War when it started, and it was about this storyteller in Baghdad during its glorious age, and then at the end you see them telling the story and they're in Baghdad and it's in ruins. And to me, it was just such a poignant image of like the downfall of a civilization. I just felt that was really deftly done. But there's a lot. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of people writing really good social commentary right now in comics. I think in part because there's just so much to say. I loved Matt Boers's Justice Warriors comic that he did with Ahoy about a future where sort of a Judge Dredd sort of spoof, where everyone lives, or there's like the bubble city, but most people have to live outside it, and outside it's just sort of lawless and chaotic. And
not to interrupt with a plug, but we're actually having Matt Boers and Ben Clarkson on next week on the
perfect
show to talk about.
That's another
good tea up there. This is great.
Yeah. And I just want to say thank you to JC Barber for the kind words earlier. That Count Dante comic sounds off the wall. Looking forward to it.
I mean, I'll give a little bit of follow-up here on the other side of the spectrum, not other side of the spectrum, but beyond having a really good understanding of politics and social issues in your work, you also have a good understanding of humor, which is not easy to do. So who are some other writers or creators you look at that you feel like are doing humor well in books or that you're enjoying right now?
Well, I just mentioned Matt Boers. I think he does it extremely well. Also, I really like... There's not a lot of funny comics out there, which is weird because they call the medium comics, but most of them are not very comical. But I also find Ice Cream Man really darkly funny. That's one of my faves. And then I think pretty much most of the good humor comics right now, and I'm not trying to be self-serving when I say this, but I think most of them come out on Ahoy, because I think they've made that their mission is to be sort of the funny Vertigo. And so I think like the Gimmick or Blacksmith or Wrong Earth, these are all like really funny comics. So I think you can I think I would, if you're interested in some humor based comics, I would maybe go just check out and see what Ahoy titles your local shop is carrying.
I mean, this maybe answers that then. A lot of your work is published by Ahoy. Is there something about their approach that matches your sensibility? Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's it. That they are sort of the funny Vertigo, which, you know, is how they sort of, that was their elevator pitch to me when we first started talking. It was weird because it was very fateful. Like I was at a New York Comic Con. I think it was 2018 New York Comic Con. And I was just coming back to my hotel from the convention, and I saw Stuart Moore in the lobby. And so I thought, oh, you know, cause I knew Stuart from DC. So I thought, oh, I'll go say hi to Stuart. And Stuart was with Tom Pyre and Hart Seeley, and they were forming Ahoy Comics at that table when I went up and said hello. And so we all just sort of got to talking, and it was just, you know, those moments when fate shines on you. But yeah, I feel like in a lot of ways we were sort of meant for each other, that my sensibilities, I think, like right for Ahoy, and they're like the perfect publisher for my sensibility.
Well, and right. Certainly you've taken things very far. There's, I'm sorry, I'm getting the name wrong, but Billionaire Dog, is that the name of the actual book?
Business Dog.
Business Dog.
But Billionaire Island is the name of the comic.
That's right. Sorry, I mixed them up. But that obviously takes things very far in terms of what you could do. But I also think in your mainstream work, like I'm thinking very specifically of the Superman Lex Luthor thing that you did as part of, I'm getting all the names wrong, I'm blaming this on my cold, but the Future Imperfect or whatever that event was.
Imperious Lex.
Imperious Lex. That took things pretty far as well, like certainly for DC Comics. Do you feel like, do they put restrictions on you at all in terms of like, yeah, this is how far you can go 80% politically, 90% politically, or they're like, go wild?
I don't think they really care. If there is a limit, I haven't hit it yet. I think they're more concerned about like continuity or this is not anything this character. I had one scene in Wonder Twins where Lex Luthor was trapped in outer space in a spaceship because he was up there to try to escape this calamity that was going on Earth. And I just had him like alone up there, like laying on his back on the spaceship, like singing to himself. And they said, no, you can't do that. Lex Luthor would never sort of like sing to himself like that. but that's the sort of thing they care about. Not necessarily, you know, you've gone too far. This is going to upset people.
Yeah.
Cool.
Before we let you go, is there anything else you're working on that you want to talk about? Obviously, these are two big projects. You got the Kickstarter, you got Second Coming Trinity, which has just started to come out. But what else have you got?
One thing I definitely want to talk about, both because I'm extremely proud of it and because I think it doesn't, you know, it probably has flown under the radar a little bit, is my new series with Ablaze called Traveling to Mars, which is about the first manned mission to Mars, and the person they send to Mars is they send because he's terminally ill. So they don't have to like bring him back. So it's about man's one way mission to Mars. And he is, it's largely about his, you know, regrets, and it's all kind of told through his diary that he's writing on the way to Mars. And he's joined on his mission by a couple of like artificially intelligent Mars rovers that are sort of his companions, and they've never met a human being before. So to them, he's sort of like a god, you know, and they don't know that, you know, he basically was just like an assistant pet store manager up until like a week before, you know, he was launched to Mars. But it's I feel like it's one of the best things I've ever written. It's full of like my sort of like meditations on mortality and what it means to have lived. And I'm very proud of it. And so I hope people will check out Traveling to Mars.
Nice. Awesome. And that's from, you said it was from Ablaze. Is that what it's coming from? Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I had no idea about that. I will definitely have to check that out.
Check that out.
That's so cool. Mark, thank you so much for coming on. Always a pleasure to chat. Congratulations on everything. And good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right. There we go. Awesome. Once again, that's Mark Russell. The books you can check out are Second Coming Trinity, which is coming out right now from Ahoy, and also Bunkbed Mishaps on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. And folks, we are going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section, because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments and we will get to them. Now, as I mentioned, I am drinking water for being very sick reasons. Pete, what are you drinking so I can live vicariously through you?
I'm drinking a Maryland beer. It's called Dr. Juicy.
Dr. Juicy?
Yeah.
Wow, is it juicy or does it taste like doctors?
It's mostly doctors, yeah. It's got a hops that's surfing, and it's from Silver Branch Brewing. It's pretty tasty. It's very, very hoppy, very delicious. It's nice, light flavor. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Well, very cool. Obviously, Justin is maybe not broadcasting from the bottom of the... opera.
So yeah, I got a text that said he couldn't find a Wi-Fi hotspot good enough to be able to join us. So he's stuck in the basement of the opera. I'm sure nothing crazy will happen to him, you know.
While he's stuck in the basement of the opera, absolutely yeah. Not. Do you think, Pete, you were a big fan of the Phantom of the Opera when it was at the Pantages? Is that
the gloriously restored Pantages Theater? Yeah, it was good times.
Were you watching video of the last performances of Phantom this past weekend?
Yeah, just having flashbacks, you know, holding my blankie, just crying my eyes out. It was lovely. Man,
beautiful.
I just wanted to point out somebody's criticizing Nat Townsend in the comments, and I'm here for it. Guys, feel free to jump in, lump on him, just, you know, attack him any way you can. I'm all about it.
This is tied into it. Ooh, no, sorry, not that one. This is from Stray Bullet. Do you currently or have you ever had an arch nemesis?
Yes. I have many throughout my life. My brother, for most of my life, has been my arch nemesis. But the whole reason I have the real Pete LePage on my socials is because... there is an evil Pete LePage out there. And at the time I was working for the Apple store and he was working down the street at the Google store. And sometimes we'd cross paths and I'd constantly offer to fight him, but he never took me up on it.
I don't think I have a formal arch nemesis or anything like that, but there's definitely people, particularly in entertainment journalism, who I'm like, oh, God damn it, that son of a bitch.
Really?
And they'll never know.
Because they
never
scoop tell them. You on things, or because
no,
they're
just because
funnier than you are, or more
because
attractive.
They're smarter and more yeah. talented. Yeah, all of that stuff. No, I think it's just like people that I don't like the attitude of how they treat fans or the entertainment, and it drives me a little nuts about it. More than anything, I don't want to use any details because I don't even want to tip my hand to folks that I'm thinking about, but it's definitely, I don't know, it's the sort of thing where, like, I generally try to be open to all opinions, but there's some people who are like, why do you keep doing this way? It makes me very frustrated. And then I wonder, like, why am I so involved and why am I so worked up about it?
But yeah, interesting.
I don't know. We don't have to get, this is Pete, this is my therapy session, right?
Oh, well, this is good. This is good to get this stuff out. I also like how we have Stray Bullies, and then there's now somebody called Stray Beans.
Ooh.
Shots fired. Shots fired.
Stray Schreukler asks, what are some examples of comics not written by Mark that surprised you with the depth of the political or other serious meditation? I mean, I don't know if it surprised me. We use this example all the time, but Concrete is probably one of the best thinking man comics because it's literally him sitting there and thinking through stuff and the meaning of life the entire time. And if I remember correctly, I haven't read it in a while, but each volume of Concrete really is Concrete exploring another part of the human experience. So That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like Alex Robinson does it with his books. You know, it's a lot of slice of life stuff, but it's also some kind of like deeper stuff. So yeah, like Too Cool to Get to Be Forgotten, I bring up a lot. That's one for me that always gets me in the feels.
Yeah. Let's see. Ooh, this is a tough one. This is from Nat Towson. Do you think Marvel can and should recast Kang? Does that post-credit sequence make it harder? Now, Justin and I talked about this a little bit on the Marvel Vision podcast. We haven't gotten your take. Pete, it kind of looks like you don't even want to touch this one.
Well, I definitely don't. I want some time to go by, some things to happen, to get some, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not touching this.
All right. I'll touch it, I guess. I'll put my hand on that stove. So first of all, to work backwards, does the post-credit sequence in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania make it harder to recast Jonathan Majors as Kang? It certainly makes it weirder, I think, because there were hundreds of him there. It wasn't like, you know, everybody has been like, oh, you could say it's a variant of Kang. And sure, but we've already seen several hundred variants of Kang, which other than a lizard were all Jonathan Majors. So to then change it to another person is strange. It will take more
adjustment.
Although
Lizard Kang was my favorite, so.
Yes. It would take more adjustment, I think, than the Edward Norton to Mark Ruffalo or Terrence Howard to Don Cheadle switches, because that was like one character. There's plenty of time. This is somebody who they were setting up as like, this is our next big guy. This is going to be everything. Everything is Jonathan Majors. So to pivot to somebody else, particularly when they've talked him up so much, even beyond the post-credit sequence, it's weird for fans. That's the fan perspective. In terms of the, do you think Marvel can and recast, should recast Kang? That ties into what we do or do not know about a domestic abuse case. And that's the part that I don't think we should be touching. Like, ultimately, I think they should, as a company, be exploring and talking about possibilities here. What I don't think they should be doing, which I worry they're doing, is waiting and being like, people will memory hole this with enough time. We'll just kind of like move on and not worry about it and not mention it at all. I think that's a bad strategy. I think the thing that they probably will do, most likely, if I'm being like very callous in Hollywood about it, is they'll do some sort of, he'll come out and say, yes, I've had some troubles in my past, but I'm doing the work on myself. I'm seeing people to help me out, and Marvel's been really supportive in this process. And then they'll try to move on from there. Whether they can or not, I don't know. That is not my place to say. But I think they should be exploring possibilities here, if they're not, is what I would say. There you go. Bad situation that involves real people, and that's the main thing that it comes down to.
Yeah.
Let's see. Strange Beans, I'm not going to touch that. Sorry, Strange Beans. All the Game, some box office analysis says, who had Puss in Boots $480 million outperforming Quantumania $474 million? Pete, you called that like 3 years ago, right? I remember you saying, you like your eyes rolled back in your head and you were like, Quantumania $474 million.
Yeah, I started, don't forget it, I started floating. Don't forget that part.
I know, I remember. It was terrifying. Yeah.
But Puss in Boots is just a solid from start to finish. I mean, it's a great movie. So, you know, good for the puss and the boots.
Yep, good for them both. Yep. The whole team. I don't think anybody had that. But Quantumania was bad enough that it just didn't have any legs to it. And Puss in Boots, meanwhile, not only is it a good, fun movie, but it's one of the only real family movies that's come out in a really long time. I think everybody's wondering why Mario is doing so well as well. I think part of the reason for that is there's no movies to take kids to, you know? So there you go. This is from Prime NRG. Do you think streaming services like Netflix will change how comics have to be released, especially with how Marvel DC will have storylines span many different comic series? Pete?
Alex?
Wait, no, I got to put it on mute because I got to sneeze. You take this one.
Oh, okay,
first.
Sure, yeah. Doing a little just soft shoe in here while Alex is taking care of business. I don't know what you're asking, but I do think that, you know, streaming services have changed the game, and I don't know how that affects comics, but sure.
I think Prime Energy is asking about the binge model, right? Just saying, do you think you can keep releasing Marvel and DC Comics once a month at 20 pages when you can get an entire 10-hour TV show over the course of a weekend that provides way more entertainment for relatively way less money?
Yeah, but what are you trying to do? Crank out comics faster? Like, you can't do that. Like, they're already going at breakneck speeds to get these comics to us once a month.
Do them live, you know? Like,
fucking live. Do it live.
Exactly.
I mean, the stuff where they had it like weekly, you know, we talked to people. They talked about how crazy stressful it was. It was amazing, but I do think that eventually the art suffers for it. So, I don't know, man. I want to find a nice, happy median where people are cranking out good content and not feeling too rushed about it. I think binging is cool, but I don't want it to fuck with my comics and how my comics come out. I like the way that they're happening, and you know, I feel good.
Well, here's the thing, though. It's already here. It's not here necessarily for Marvel and DC, but it's here on, like, Webtoon, for example. There are people that are putting out stuff every single day, new content, or at least once a week. It's definitely much more frequently, and it provides that need and fills that need more than the monthly comics do. And I do think, you know, at least in part, they're coming around to realize it. You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks back, but Archie Comics has Big Ethel Energy that they're doing over on Webtoon. I think Marvel and DC have done some stuff as well. So, similarly, Marvel has the Unlimited comics, which I think are a little shorter, if I remember correctly, and also come out more frequently. So I think they understand it. I don't think they will be able to change the system for monthly print comics, because if that was going to happen, it would have happened over the beginning of the pandemic when there was all that push and pull on things. And the system with brick and mortar comic book stores is just too strong. So it would take something more seismic than a deadly pandemic to change that system. So I don't think it's necessarily going to change that anytime soon. And it's not necessarily Netflix. Let's see. Do we have anything else here? Ooh, here we go. Been listening to the Lock and Key podcast and wondering if Pete still hates Wells. What about Orson Welles? And the answer is yes. You literally mentioned how much you hated Wells yesterday.
Yeah, I went on a big rant on Justin. I felt bad because the look in his face was a little hurt by me hating on Wells so much. But, you know, he grew up in a creepy lifestyle that scares me. So, of course, as somebody who's detached from their feelings, I'm going to lash out about that. You know what I mean? Slowly working through it. So hopefully life will get easier.
Yep. Here we go. Stanley says, are you going to watch or review more old DC movies? Absolutely. We're going to be doing those on the Sons of a Gun podcast. So subscribe and stay tuned for that. I think the next one we'll have coming up at some point is Batman Returns. So as we gear up for the Flash movie. And this is from Frederico Rosa. Who do you guys think is the best recent original character from Marvel DC?
Wow. I say this a bunch, but I love Amadeus Cho. I think it was just such a cool move on Marvel, and it really led to some kind of interesting things. And his team up with Hercules is some of my favorite comics. So,
yeah. Gosh, recent original character. We were just talking the other day about both Miles Morales and Miss Marvel. They're not necessarily recent at this point, but
yeah, Miss Marvel for sure has been.
Yeah, they've had like huge lasting appeal. On the DC side, I felt very conflicted about this character originally, but he's really grown on me. Ghostmaker, Batman character.
Yeah. They did not like when he first... I was all bottom when he first showed up, and you were like, stupid name, man. I don't know about this guy.
Yeah.
He said this friend we didn't know about this whole time. Oh, okay.
But I don't know. It works. He's a fun character. So there you go.
Great.
This is a good one from Danny Heck. Which MCU character would you transport to Riverdale?
Ooh. I'm going to say Cyclops, and hopefully he dies. Yeah!
MCU character?
That's right.
No, MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, fuck.
I mean, I'll throw out there while you're thinking about something. I think Kat Dennings Darcy would fit in just fine.
Oh, you took mine. That's great, though.
Right. Also, Jimmy Woo, just to like keep going with the WandaVision theme.
Oh, yeah. And
they both have a fun time there.
I'll get tired of him doing that card trick, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. I could see Jimmy Woo showing Jughead some close-up magic.
That would be great.
Yeah, I'm into it. Let's make it happen. Let's see. Oh, gosh, there's so many comments here.
Nat, you're a weirdo.
Yes. Well, there you go. I think we could probably wrap up there. There's a bunch of great comments and suggestions, but we are going to finish up and move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's. Do you still have Long John Silver cards? Please tell me that's over.
I mean, I never had the cards, but I'll buy them.
Oh, wow. The fact that you were going so hard for LJS there, I don't know, man. But yeah, all right. And we have somebody, right?
We do. We have Daddy Heck. Hello, Daddy. Hey! Welcome.
Hey. Yeah! Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, and Hi. We know that you are a Southside Serpent, so congratulations. Yes. You got the tat? You got the tat?
Not yet. I'm working on getting it on my left butt cheek, but we'll figure it out.
All right, but you've done the serpent dance, so you're good.
Yeah, I have, yes. Okay. He was there for it. This is my boyfriend, Ira.
Oh, hey!
Hello.
Welcome.
All right. Pete, you ready to do some trivia?
Oh, sure. I was just having the fun with the kind of moment with Danny here. But all right, fine. Let's move on. All right, cool. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Elizabeth Hubbard, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Gears of War developer Cliff Bezanansky is co-writing an Image comic called Blank. Is it A, Beers of War, B, Scrapper, or C, Colleen Zank? So one option A is just a fun idea that I'm trying to pitch, or you could choose B.
I'm going to choose B.
You are correct. Yeah, Scrapper. Interested to check that out. Should be pretty cool. It's about stray dogs. You hear that, stray bullies? All right, here we go. Question number two. IDW will be celebrating 40 years of Blank with a 100-page special. Sounds awesome. Is it A, My Little Pony, B, Scott Summers is a Tool, or C, Scott Holmes?
What do you think?
Oh, don't ask me.
A.
A is correct. Correct. Well done. Yeah, don't overthink these. Okay, last one. What is returning on August 16th to Marvel Comics? Is it A, Good X-Men Stories, Shots Fired, Jordan D. White, or B, Alpha Flight, or is it C, Mora West?
I'm going to say B.
B is correct, and oh my God, there's adorable cat in the frame. Yes, hello.
That's Princess.
Oh, adorable Princess of Power.
We've lost Pete, unfortunately, but congratulations. You've gotten either a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's. Which one do you think you're going to go for?
You know, I do love me a fish taco, but I'm going to say Midtown Comics.
All right. Good call. Nice.
All right. We will get you set up with that. Just hit us up. Hit us up on the Slack and we'll get it all set up. And do you have a guess as to what movie Pete was doing a tribute to?
I don't know.
Was it a movie? This is old school television stuff right here.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. So I'm gonna say the Carol Burnett Show? I don't know.
Ooh, close. Not close. Kevin. Here's the world, and then it is turning. I'm talking.
The world turns.
Yeah, that's right. I'm talking about the 1956 to 2010 TV show, As the World Turns.
Wow. Amazing. Daddy, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on the gift card, and we'll check it out.
Yeah, thanks for showing us a little slice of your life there. That was really cool.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good night. Good luck with the tat.
Thanks.
All right, there we go. Now, before we start to wrap up here, as we all know, comic books are coming out this week. We love comic books. Lots of stuff to choose from. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I'll tell you, there's a lot of great comics that I'm looking forward to talking with you about, fighting with you about. There's going to be some real interesting things going on.
Oh, boy. Okay.
But I'm looking forward to DC Silent Tales, number one.
Ooh.
As well as Punisher, number 11. Let's go.
Excellent choices. Things I'm curious to check out. She-Hulk number 12 is coming out from Marvel. Oh, love that book from Rainbow Rowell.
Extra large issue.
It is. It's an anniversary issue, so that's pretty exciting. And also, No One number 2 from Image Comics. This continues the massive verse. Really dug the first issue of that, so I'm excited to check out the second one. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Mark Russell for coming on to talk about Second Coming Trinity, as well as Bunk Bed Mishaps, which is now on Kickstarter. Also, JC Barber and Wes Watson for Count Dante, which is coming out from Scout Comics next week. It's very fun. Definitely check that out. As we mentioned earlier, Ben Clarkson and Matt Boers are going to be here to talk about Justice Warriors next week. Also, Nick Patara is going to be back to talk about the end of Axe Wielder John, a book that we really enjoyed. From his kickoff about a year ago. Also, we mentioned this earlier, but Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, is ongoing. Check that out. Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We're putting that up once a week as well. Riverdale After Dark, a Riverdale podcast, is once a week. I'm really enjoying Danny's boyfriend dancing. It's very cute. You guys can't see it, but it's cute. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night. Oh, yay!
In the gateway, ripping it off!